thank you for listening to Waking Up in South Africa. We hope that our conversations and guided meditations have been of value to you. If you'd like to support our ongoing work, you're welcome to make a donation via mindfulness.org.za/donations. Welcome back to the Waking Up in South Africa podcast. This episode, we are talking to Craig Makosi-Charnock, the founder of Ubuntu Bridge, which is a social enterprise teaching Xhosa as a means to facilitate deeper and real integration in this country, which has been divided in so many ways. And one way in particular is through the language that we speak.
Ndiyavuya ukuba lapha ngoku. I'm happy to be here right now. And yeah, I would like to take the opportunity to ground myself and center myself a little bit. Certainly, I find every day is very, very busy. So I'm happy to do it here as part of the process. And I mean, there's so many different ways to do it. So we're just going to do the simplest one, which is just to perfumla, to breathe. So the invitation is to vala amehlo, close your eyes, and begin to faga umoya, which is to bring in the breath. To bring in the breath, to observe sensations and feelings, and to exhale whenever it feels comfortable to do so. And faka umoya, breathing in air, atmosphere, wind, spirit. Kupa umoya. And when you're ready, vula amehlo, open your eyes and stare at the screen.
thank you.
Quite tricky to do that in Xhosa and English on a Zoom call, but I was like, okay, I'm going to explain what umoya means. And then I was like, no, hang on. This is a grounding, centering moment. Anyways, it's hard to have my teacher hat on and my party hat on at the same time, but that's usually what happens in my life.
Yeah. So yes, Craig, I was excited to have you on this call because you do represent this, you speak about these two hats, and in you as a friend, as a colleague, I see somebody who really does weave so many different threads into some kind of form and some kind of manifestation. I've known you as a Xhosa teacher. I've known you as a yoga friend. I've known you on Vipassana. We've had so many incredible conversations, and I would like to use this time now, this conversation, to really just listen to you in whichever way comes out now, speak about your journey of waking up in South Africa, weaving together the inner work of waking up with your walk in the world. So wherever that takes you.
Cool. Okay, nice. Thank you again for having me and for asking these questions. It's interesting. Two things came to mind. The one, you know, we're talking about hats, and I'm like, one thing I have is a lot of hats. I've got boxes of hats, a lot of very cool hats, which I'm very grateful for. But I hadn't really thought about how metaphorical it has been in my life, you know, in terms of wearing so many different hats so often, even just within Ubuntu Bridge. So the other thing that came to mind was you said waking up in South Africa, and I thought of Johnny Clegg, because I don't know why. I think I was looking in a folder of old designs and I found a bunch of pictures I'd kept of his. And one of them is a Savuka. And Savuka is the name of his one band, because obviously there was Juluka. Juluka means sweat in Zulu. And then there was Savuka, which was where it was like him and two other white guys and then three, I suppose there were Zulu guys. I don't actually know too much about Savuka, but the songs all cross over. But Savuka means we woke up. That's what it means. Vuka is awake. And Sa is like we in the remote past tense. So we woke up. And it also, in a nice little word play, is South Africa, Vuka, Savuka, S-A, wake up. So yeah, so it was a curious one for me because obviously Johnny Clegg is one of those, in a way, one of my heroes, one of my role models in terms of the work I do in South Africa, you know, using language, using music, him far more effectively than me in terms of music to connect people and to build bridges. And also to, I think, allow people to find a new way of feeling South African, especially as white people, you know? So, and to some degree, there is a crossover, one overlap with what I'm trying to do and what I am doing, which is like, as I've walked my own path of feeling more South African and whatever that means, and trying to share that with people primarily through language. So, you know, there's not really a blueprint for, I think, any identity. It's always ultimately about a relationship to oneself and relationship to others. But at the very least, language opens these kind of gateways or channels or, yeah, even just alternative ways. It's not even like one way is better or worse, but sometimes we get stuck in a channel. And then if we open up another one, it like allows us to be slightly differently or to see differently. It's just a different perspective. And I think people get caught up a lot in like, one way is better than the other way, but ultimately all things kind of point to one truth. Okay, we're getting too philosophical. So
I think I'd like to just add in there though, that what it resonates, what you're saying about language being this gateway, because there's all this work that can be done through practices like mindfulness, like watching the breath, like doing yoga, that render us more sensitive and more in touch with, I suppose, the pulse of pain in the world, or what we really truly moved to bring forth through our work or through our action. But it can, I've definitely felt in my own journey times where I'm like, okay, but how? Like, I'm upset about the state of things, but how? And for me, as you're talking and through also my own thinking recently, communication, language, learning how to build the bridges is a very practical answer to that question, because it's about the relationality of waking up. It's no good if it's just me. It's about all of us coming into a conversation. Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I'm tempted to go down the line of like, you know, this notion of waking up, and the question of waking up as a South African and the question of waking up as a world and people and all the different things that are happening at the moment in the internet and, you know, social media, all these different factors that are allowing us to wake up in a lot of ways to the reality of who we are, you know, as beings, as fragments of reality, experiencing reality, because now science is sort of proving what so many spiritual teachings have always said. You know, including the way in which information can be spread and shared seemingly through magic. I mean, I still think Wi-Fi and all these things are pretty much magic. I mean, let me start a little bit at the beginning. So, I was raised in Cape Town without any particularly spiritual background or infrastructure, we might say, besides, I guess it's called, there's some word for it. It's like mediocre Anglicanism, I guess, where there's an agnostic Anglicanism. And I went to a school which is kind of centered around a religious theme, but isn't particularly religious, which in one way is good. you know, that's bishops. I mean, you can get confirmed and stuff, and we do go to chapel, but it wasn't, I'll say it wasn't pushed on us, but now I'm remembering divinity class, which, so yeah, maybe it was pushed on us. But luckily, my parents were not forceful in any particular religious way. So I felt like I grew up with a fair degree of freedom. However, there was a void and there was a gap. And I think that discovering, especially the teachings of Buddha and, you know, Buddha's connection to the greater Hindu faith and ultimately to yoga. And yoga I actually discovered through the Bhakti Yoga Society. So that's the Hare Krishnas at UCT. And I remember they brought, I think, David Jacobs from the Iyengar Yoga to do a class with us all one lunchtime before we got our free dal. Anyway, he made us sweat, that guy, that was for sure. And that was my first introduction to, you know, physical or asana-based yoga. And yeah, that started a great journey. So yeah, I suppose I was 22 or 21 or something. And yeah, it was a wonderful discovery for myself. And I really enjoyed yoga as a practice. The Buddhism also led me to Vipassana and to doing Vipassana sits. And that was a really great, you know, I kind of feel like every person in the world should be taught Vipassana. It's just such a crucial, simple skill that can change the entire tone of one's existence and life. You know, without being religious, without being dogmatic, without being hierarchical, it's just like, you know, this philosophy, which is quite simple, very practical, based on experience, can be tested through experience, and you can carry with you anywhere and everywhere, and you don't need anything for it except your breath and your mind.
I mean, I think just to add in here for the listeners, John Kabat-Zinn's idea for mindfulness was sparked during his Vipassana sit. So I think secular mindfulness is deeply rooted in that practice. It's just got a new name.
Yeah, I'm quite disconnected from any sort of modern mindfulness school or anything like that. I remember reading, I think it was Rob Nairn's book, Intro to Buddhism or something, and he said mindfulness is the practice of knowing what you're doing while you're doing it. And I was just like, awesome, that's it, you know, just being aware of what you're doing while you're doing anything is meditation, absolutely anything. Even doing really bad things could be meditation. So, you know, obviously you want to then learn about Buddha's teachings and karma and, you know, the Noble Eightfold Path, etc., to avoid suffering and unnecessary discomforts. But at the end of the day, meditation itself, as you say, it's secular. So I've always been greatly appreciative of the practice of breath awareness, of anapana, particularly sensations around the nostrils, sensations around the breath. And then Vipassana was this amazing next level, you know, really being able to explore sensations in the body. So that was a foundation for me, Vipassana. And then along with Sudarshan Kriya from Sri Sri and the Art of Living, which was hugely influential on my life, just being able to learn those pranayama, simple pranayama, the kriyas, bhastrika. And, you know, sometimes when my mind was so active already and dominant and not easy to go into a meditative state, just allowing an active bridge, which would bring me into a space of easier mindfulness and easier restfulness, was such a useful tool. So I was kind of pretty established in my little humble way in Vipassana and Art of Living, or the Sudarshan Kriya practices, when I finished university around 2003. And around that time, I'd also been sort of waking up, to use your terminology, to a couple of things about society which had begun to really irk me. And one of them was that I had these Xhosa mamas who had been living in our home for our entire life, you know, different mamas at different times, and who we had these really warm and loving relationships with, and some of whom had literally lived with us, and who knew us, knew our family, knew everything about us, but we didn't know them. We didn't know their families. We didn't know their living conditions, where they came from, and not much of their language. I literally had a few sentences relating to, can I have supper? And thank you very much. But I didn't speak any Xhosa more than that. So there was a couple of sentences. And when I was discovering all these different shamanic teachings during my university career, like all of them, including Buddhism, especially Seva from The Art of Living, all of them point to service, you know, being in service in the world as one of the highest forms of yoga, bhakti yoga, devotional yoga, or karma yoga, just being in service. And I don't know how many great teachers we are privileged to have on this planet, but you can go to any bookstore and just find a lot of them who have taught this for a long time, that you can really create abundance and joy and health and happiness in your life through an attitude of being in service in the world. And it's obviously, you know, to anyone with eyes and ears and a heart and all of that, it's pretty clear to see that our world has been in a very difficult state for a while. I think it's always been in a challenging, difficult state. So I don't know if it's any worse than it ever has been, but at least we're very, very aware now, you know, inequality, pollution, poverty, animal cruelty, et cetera, et cetera. The list is endless. So for me, there was this philosophical arrival that I'd kind of come to through these readings, practices, philosophies. And then there was this kind of experiential, circumstantial arrival of realizing, you know, wow, there's this huge gap between me and my Xhosa mamas. I felt a calling of sorts to merge these two. And at the time, I wasn't sure what that meant, but it arose as an intuition to get on a bus and go to the Eastern Cape or to KwaZulu-Natal and just immerse myself in the culture of the people, wherever that might be, and learn language. I mean, it wasn't the primary focus to learn language, but it was already an assumption that I would definitely take my books along and go and live with the people. I wasn't going there to teach them English. I wasn't going there to, you know, help them become more Western. I wanted to go and experience them in their space where they would be the empowered ones and I would be the disempowered one, okay, at least on a geographical level. So, that's how it started. I took a bus and I went to KwaZulu-Natal, and I could tell lots of stories, but long story short, I met Sangomas. I met these traditional healers. In fact, hang on, this is how the story goes. I was struggling to find a circumstance in a rural village with people that resonated doing some sort of work that made sense, where I wasn't a burden on people. And my mom, who is an artist at a gallery, the gallery owner's daughter was training to be a Sangoma, and that Sangoma, her trainer, somehow these mamas, you know how mamas do it, they put all these dots together, and I got this invitation from a Sangoma to go to a ceremony in Port St. John's. And I was avoiding Port St. John's, but I just knew that Port St. John's was the one place I'd been avoiding when I left Cape Town for various historical reasons relating to previous relationships. And when I heard that that was where the invitation was, I knew that's where I had to go. Because I was just like, yeah, it's the one place I'm avoiding. So I had to go back down, catch another bus, Mthatha, to Port St. John's, went to the ceremony and met these Sangomas. And that was really the beginning of an introduction into the spiritual side of the Xhosa culture. And which I hadn't really thought about before, you know, like, I guess at that time I was like, oh, witch doctors, of course, witch doctors. Like, that's what they used to call them, you know, that's what we've always heard about. But I never had equated witch doctors with traditional healers, with shamans, with wisdom keepers, with healers, with, you know, with that whole cycle of thoughts that was so effortless to take from Indian culture and Hawaiian culture, the kahunas and the Toltec wisdom of Don Juan and Castaneda. And you've got these different awesome teachings, the Maoris, and you've got the Aboriginals from Australia and all these great books with great wisdom that are all very popular. But like in our country, anything African is just kind of like kept somewhere in the dark, you know. And this is 2000, so it's different. But that began, being invited into the village and then being invited also to train as a Sangoma. A number of Sangomas told me they recognized my calling and that I should train to be a Sangoma, which I was a little bit skeptical of, but because I didn't know enough about Sangomahood and Ubugriha at that time, but also because, I was skeptical, but I also was like, well, I know I've got a calling. I mean, I've been sleeping on a yoga mat in my in the domestic worker's bedroom for the last 2 years, because she'd moved out, and that's where I chose to stay, not in the fancy posh room. I was living very sort of frugal and low key and loving it, like really enjoying a minimal lifestyle. And I'd been minimizing a lot of things just out of my yogic practice. So when they described the ways of being a twasa, and a twasa is a trainee sangoma, twasa meaning a blossom or appear, and you go through that process, ugu twasa, you appear, you blossom, maybe similar to ugu vuka, waking up, and then you become a sangoma at the end of that process. That's the journey of that. So when they told me what twasa is and what it means, twasa, I was like, well, I do that already. I've already been practicing a lot of those things, but in a parallel kind of way. So yeah, it was an interesting time, and I went through you can ask more specific questions if you want, because I could talk for hours about it. But basically I went through that process, decided it was right for me to become a sangoma based on what they were saying. I'd initially said, no, thank you, I'm just here to be of help. And then quite quickly, I could feel that it would be way more. There was just this gap where I should be a twasa. And so I moved into that space. Mm-hmm. It was a really great experience. And I've never doubted that I was meant to be a twasa, a trainee sangoma. But also, after a long period of time, I dropped out would be one word, but another word would be to say that my dreams and my intuition and my ancestors and my guides, just as they brought me there, took me out. And it wasn't to become a sangoma, which at the time I was a bit disappointed, but I'm also greatly relieved, because sangomas is a whole story and they've got a lot of baggage and people have perceptions. And what I found, which I didn't realize, was that 2 years later, Ubuntu Bridge would start as this kind of way to bridge my peoples and my cultures and my languages and, knit bits of society back together. And that for me is the medicine. That's the medicine that I dispense and that I try to facilitate. And what I like about it is that it's something everyone can do. It's just nice. It's low key. So I really appreciate that I get to play this role of a teacher rather than as a shaman or a sangoma or a healer, which are, I think, are very burdensome titles to carry. Mm-hmm. So
I'm also thinking now of Siddhartha, the story, and how you've kind of gone deep into that thing and then gone there and fetched that thing and then went there and constantly sort of picking up the inventory of things that you can then offer.
I wish it was as nice a story as Siddhartha, because that's one of my favorite books of all time. And Hermann Hesse is one of my favorite authors by a long way. I'd love to think of it like that. Maybe I'm still only a third or a quarter of the way through the story. But
just bring it to where things have got to now, because now I'm just from knowing you, there's a new blossoming, a new aspect to Ubuntu Bridge that you are growing and developing that's taking you back to the Eastern Cape.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, look, Ugutwasa is the most profoundly brilliant mindfulness training that I have encountered. It's not written down. I mean, it is written down by certain authors now, but it's just a brilliantly well-adapted mindfulness training that is incredibly healing. And of course, if you're a Tibetan, you can go chill with the Dalai Lama in your monastery somewhere. And I suppose in our cultures, theoretically, besides that, we did some pretty horrendous things to our traditional healers over hundreds of years in Europe. We could become a monk or a nun, which doesn't sound terribly exciting, but they do mindfulness-based stuff, theoretically. And however, the Xhosa people have this beautiful and ancient, and not just the Xhosa, but basically all African folk, really, they have these trainings to become very deeply intuitive, mindful healers. And so I got a lot from the process. I got a huge, huge amount from living in the village, from the specific trainings. Again, I won't go too much into detail, but specific trainings. And then also the fact just being a privileged white guy living in a village with no water, no electricity, at least no running water, you know, having to fetch water on buckets in the dawn, you know, down steep hills, slippery slopes, you know, cows and goats chilling in the water and like, you know, having to survive like that was a very sobering reality. And, you know, washing our clothes in the rivers and things, cooking on open fires, like for 20 people at a time. It was extremely hard work. And I was basically a servant. I mean, that's when you train as a twasa, you become a servant. So I got quite an extreme version of the experience, but it was fantastic for me. I'm forever grateful to that period of time. And not only did it give me a huge amount of mindfulness training, it's the only way I managed to survive it really was through Vipassana in motion. And, of course, there's the dancing as well. So there's like so many layers that I would love to go into. And I mean, I've been writing about it for years. I just haven't ever collated it all. So I hope that I will start releasing it even just as videos and podcasts, but I'm always so busy with the closer stuff. So the point is that I've always wanted to bridge people back into those spaces, not as trainee Sangomas, not as twasas. That was very tough and intense. And there's a lot of hectic stories that come out of those spaces. So I think that's a bit much, you know, except for the adventurers who want that, they can go for it. But what I do think was needed was for people to get into rural areas, to experience an older style of South African living, a more the actual way the majority live and are used to, being closer to that and closer to the way that people exist with the land and with each other. And it's also great for language learning. So, you know, once Ubuntu Bridge started in about 2005, early 2006, and obviously it was closer people saying, "Yo, please teach others how to speak," you know, because they were so happy. I mean, everywhere I went, I just had closer people extremely excited about me talking closer. It just was like amazing. And, you know, everyone just encouraging me, people thanking me, you know, I mean, it's like, It's something that still like makes me emotional, you know, because people literally thanked me and still thank me, but maybe not so much. Now it's just students thanking me, but like the amount of closer people, security guards, like people who I would just meet. And I don't think it was even about speaking closer. It was just about being willing to see them. You know, like I would be at parties in Harrington Street and town and stuff, and it would just be like loads of privileged people of different colors, I'm sure, just all getting whatever. And seeing these like extremely poorly paid security people or cleaners or whatever, who just being completely ignored, who like watching like young people blowing like 6 months of their salary, you know, on drugs, you know, and marveling obviously at their tolerance of it all, but just talking to them as people and engaging with them, I think people really appreciated it. And as I say, it could have been in English as well, but because it was in Xhosa, you know, it changed the tone of so many conversations that I had with people and changed my own way of seeing things as well. Not massively, because there certainly wasn't some massive personality change, but certainly it changes in understanding and sensitivities and perspectives. So I've always wanted to bring that in as well. The language is great, and teaching people language is cool, and talking theoretically about culture is great as well. But taking people into the villages is not only good for those people as an experience, but also good for the villages themselves. Like village people would often, you know, express their enthusiasm and loved having us staying there with them, especially when we stayed as guests in their homes or in their little side huts, paying for accommodation, etc., and bringing them like really desperately needed income, you know, the income that they would have to send family or children to the townships to go work as domestics for who knows how long before they could send a couple of $100 back. So, you know, and we would find ourselves, the point is it was like very, very positive experience all around. And in 2000, I think 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I used to take people into the villages, usually quite small groups, 4 or 5 people, sometimes twice I took a group from bishops of teenage boys. I took a group, that mixed group, which had some SIP skills and some ladies from Old Mutual who just like, just different amazing people who were like, we want to come do this. And they would stay 7 days to a week or up to 10 days with families in their homesteads. And I would visit people each day and go teach, or they'd come visit my hut and come teach, but spread around the village. It was really cool. And that was real immersion as far as I'm concerned. And it was great experience, and it went really well. But of course, you know, these are not business ventures. They rely on me to be fully dedicated to occupy particular spaces, and be a bridge between spaces for fairly long periods of time. So they kind of eventually got a bit, I found myself back in the city teaching. And I also felt like the city is where we need to work, you know, and that's where we need to help transform things. So now finally, long story short, in the last 2 years, Your Khosa has emerged, which is kind of a coming together, as you said, of the spiritual mindful practices, which have become very in vogue. They have become very trendy. You know, it's like now everyone knows what yoga is, you know. When I was 22, it wasn't something that everyone knew what it was. It was quite, you know, there was only Iyengar teachers and Ananda Kutia Ashram in Cape Town. You know, they weren't like hot yoga studios and stuff. So it was, it's become more of a recognizable thing. So in a way, we're tapping into that sense of like, you know, yoga, meditation, but not in a commercial sense. It's more like saying, you know, there is a movement of people waking up to a deeper reality. You know, it's not just about our identities as white, as black, as rich, as poor, as privileged, as disadvantaged, whatever. It's about the fact that, you know, when you do begin these practices, you start to realize the layers of your reality are that much deeper. So yeah, it's a synthesis of that with the Khosa, and it's not, you know, it's not a full immersion in the way that I used to do them. Now it's like we stay together in a place in the village, you know, and connected in various ways. And to some degree, it's up to the participants how much time they want to spend in immersed situations. But it's good. It's got balance. People are enjoying it, and I think it's great. And it's more popular than how it used to be. And at the end of the, because sometimes, you know, it can be uncomfortable, you know, to be immersed in a rural village, which is part of the you know, the richness. Anyway, so I don't know if that kind of ties it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautifully. And I loved what you wrote recently about what yoga really means, and then how we can think of the yoga of language. Mm-hmm. And how the two can also complement one another, the health aspect that yoga would bring, and how that creates conditions for learning, deep learning, openness, receptivity.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's so many benefits to yogic practice, you know, for children and for adults, for people of all ages. So I'm just a huge fan of, you know, but also yoga as a brand, you know, and not a yoga as a doctrine, more like, you know, the theory of anything that bridges or, you know, connects us to deeper parts of ourselves, which is why, like, as you yourself know, like the yoga of dance, you know, and the meditation of dance and of movement and all these things. So it's very exciting to see how many options there are for young people and for all people of all ages nowadays. You know, it really has opened up in a lot of ways, which is one of the benefits of modern social media, etc., is how much abundance of knowledge, wisdom, practices we now are able to access. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an easy path. And I don't think like being, you know, human on earth at this time is easy either. And how to negotiate all these transitions we're going through is really tricky. So,
well, I think that's where the mindfulness comes in. Mindfulness, Vipassana, whatever we call it, practices that help us to unstick from the narratives that push us in certain directions, and to keep sort of pulling back and reconnecting to what really matters. And I think the stronger that tethering to an internal compass is, the easier it is to negotiate these shifts and forge new pathways.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the deeper truths is that, you know, there are no real answers to it all. It's way too complex and complicated. And at the end of the day, the best thing we can do is to, you know, invest in ourselves through our practices and, you know, to nurture that connection to whatever one discovers, you know, within oneself. So, yeah, I think that's probably the goal. Sometimes I feel stuck in my own, in this calling and in the identity that has been, you know, somewhat created around it. I'm seen through a particular lens because of what I do. You know, that's been inevitable. And I'm also attached to all these dynamics that I'm part of. And to be honest, they can be quite exhausting. Like everyone, I'm sure, can find themselves quite exhausted by it all. So certainly the yoga, the meditation is vital. Mm-hmm. And the dance, the dancing more than ever. I think it's just like, yeah, melding movement with silence, or, you know, movement with stillness is just, I think, yeah, it's the key, you know. I think that's the way animals do it. You know, they're not all sitting there like, in a particular posture. Some of them.
Yeah, exactly. We are at time, so I am really grateful that we could have this conversation, which is an ongoing conversation. You know, I feel like these kinds of conversations flow through many different spaces, and along the way we kind of make connections, and I really appreciate that we've been able to have this conversation for a while now, and I'm really inspired by the work that you're doing, and I'm sure the people listening as well. So that, yeah, to really hear how for you, as you've kind of become more sensitive and more alarmed, you've done something about it. And through doing something, you've also then found your way. And it takes courage to find new pathways. So thank you. And yeah.
It's a pleasure. I think one of the great realizations for me has been that, you know, they always say, what's it? You know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And it's just this return to this like realization that Ubuntu community, it's like who we are and the joy that we experience is definitely relating, is part of our relationships, or is based on our relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's what yoga is, you know, it's a relationship to self or to what is. And, you know, certainly Ubuntu and certainly the whole Xhosa mission is, yeah, it's about our relationships to others. There's always a mirroring between our relationships with those outside of us and those and ourself within. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of feel like seeing society as it is, it's a mirror of how disconnected people have become. And so my prayer and my hope for everyone listening and just out there in the world is that, you know, maybe through connecting with people, connecting ourselves around the world, we can begin to also heal within ourselves and vice versa. So, thank you for inviting me to talk. And yeah, it could be a 10 times longer conversation with many of the points debatable and further explored, but I appreciate that sometimes just a hint of it is also more than enough. So thank you.
And I'm sure if people are inspired to know more, they can be directly in touch with you.
I'm still gearing up here. I've had a 10-year run up to like release more and more content. So I'm sure people will, if they want to, they'll be able to find some platform where I'm making a noise. Thanks for your work. Thanks for your teachings. Yeah. And yeah, we'll talk again soon.
For sure. And for those listening, if you want to find out more, you can just check out the synopsis that will go with this podcast, and you can listen through any of the platforms and share and give feedback as you wish. So thank you, Craig, and have a beautiful rest of the day.